This is the second part of a series that we're just looking at this wonderful topic of a thing called money, things that we all have, that we all earn, the things that we all are involved in on not just a monthly basis or a weekly basis, but literally every day of our lives. There is transactions that happen. And these days, more likely, there'll be electronic transactions. I was 1981, I was just turned 18 on the 17th of February, and I started my first full-time job with the Queensland Electricity Commission. I was based at the Gladstone Power Station. I was an apprentice. I received an apprenticeship, which I was very excited about. 91 of us in the state received apprenticeships with the QEGB, they called themselves, Queen's Electricity Generating Board. And we were sent to Brisbane, and we're to go through their personalised training college. They had a personal training college there. And so for, I think, the first 6 weeks of my employment, I was in the training college. The first week, I received something that I was really looking forward to. It was a pay packet. Who remembers pay packets? Before there was electronic transfers of incomes and pays. And this pay packet was white. It was quite large. And it had paper money in 1981. Anybody remember that? Do other countries in the world still have paper money in those days? Now, of course, it's what they've brought in is polymer money, which is plastic money. But we had paper money, and I received my pay packet. All 91 of us were quite excited about that, and the coins were rolling around on the bottom. I remember it for two reasons that day, is because one of my apprentice friends ripped the top off really excited and took the notes top off his notes as well. I think he was able to stick it together with sticky tape and they still accepted it, so it was okay. The second reason I remember that day is I received $91, my first pay packet. That was quite an extensive amount of money for me. And you know the exciting bit about it? I remember this thought, you know what? They're going to actually give this to me every week. This is amazing. $91 every week. What am I going to do with it? I didn't know what to do with it. I felt empowered because now I was receiving my own income and I could buy what I liked. Mind you, I didn't buy a great deal. I think I saved up. But I do remember this excitement. I can actually, because at the training college, they had a canteen where you could buy your lunch. And I was able to go to that place every day, and I could actually buy a meat pie. Well, that was the big adventure for me. I'd come out of high school, fresh out of high school. I only got tuck shop once a week, even as a grade 12. So 25 cents, you know, buy one thing. I don't know, 40 cents I might have got. But now I've got $91 to spend on lunch. It was fantastic. I didn't spend it all. But it empowers you, and that's what money does. It can empower you for good. It can empower you to use it wisely. It can empower you to do great things, to influence, do things for God's kingdom, which is incredible. Or it can be that money can empower you the opposite direction. It can be incredibly an incredible destructive force. It can be a hindrance even to people's lives. And it becomes quite a sad event. Do you know that, you know, they say 70% of people who win large amounts of money, like maybe gold lotto, within 1 year, they have less than what they started with, which is sad. So we see that money can be incredibly empowering for good, or it can be very empowering for destruction. And Jesus literally spoke about money a lot. Whether it was money or talking about our possessions. Two-thirds of his parables are based upon talking about possessions or money. So Jesus spoke about it a lot. And I've wondered over the years why that would be. And I realized that what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24 was true, because I've come to understand money can be a rival to your devotion to God. Because Jesus says this, he says, you know what? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. True, isn't it? I've found out in my life there's only room for one thing on the throne of my life. I've tried to put other things there at times. Ego, material possessions. But you know, it just doesn't work. It's only meant for God. It's that vacuum, that God-shaped vacuum, that we put God first in our lives. And everything else flows out of that. So as we look at this and this topic, I'm excited about this topic because I've spent the last 50 years of my life learning how to do it right. And I still haven't got it right. Don't come to me for financial advice. I'm not a financial advisor. But I have discovered one thing, and that's the things I'd love to just share with you today in regard to this whole topic, because I think it's very practical and a reality for our lives, isn't it? Every day we've got to face the reality that we sometimes don't have enough of it. Sometimes we're trying to make decisions of whether is that a need or a desire. There's a whole lot of areas in our life we've got to make decisions most days of our life. You know, will I have the large meal or will I have the medium or the small? You know, whatever it may be. Sometimes it's not a matter of whether we can afford it or not. Sometimes it's a matter of do I really need it or not, you know. You hearing me? Will I take the big piece of cheesecake or just the small one? Whatever. So here we go, just talking about this. One thing about getting older, hopefully, is that we get a little wiser. Is that right? I think with me getting a little older, I've made enough mistakes that now I've got a little wiser, and I'm still getting wiser. I'll never stop learning, hopefully. So what I want to share is just a little bit out of that, and more importantly, what God has to say. As I said, money speaks to us last week. Money will speak a lot to you. It'll whisper in your ear. It'll whisper three things, maybe more, but at least three things. It'll say, if only you had a little more. The second thing it'll say is your self-worth is connected to your net worth. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. Your self-worth needs to be in an incredible God that created you, not in a material possession or the bank balance. It's in Him that we live and move. So don't listen to that lie. But it'll whisper in your ear, oh, if I just had that, then I'll be up with the Joneses. I've never met the Joneses. Has anybody met the Joneses? But anyway, it's an iconic term we use in Australia. The third thing money will talk to you and whisper to you, it says that when you have that, then you'll be happy. I've discovered when I had that, it made me initially excited, but it never made me happier long term. Because there's always the next thing to get. I think you understand the point. Money speaks to us. But you know, money not only speaks to us, money also says something else. Money says a lot about us. Because how we use our finance reveals a lot about you and me. How we use it reveals a lot. What we think about it reveals a lot about you and me. And so I want to read to you one of those parables that Jesus talks about possessions and money in Luke chapter 12, 13 to 19. And this is what it says. And then one of the crowd said to Jesus, or said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Come on, we've all done this. Maybe, to an extent. Tell my brother to give me half of the lollies. I don't know what it is for you. Tell my sister, you know, because mum, you fire the bullets. I'm just asking, I can't get it off him because he'll punch me. But if you get it off him, he'll have to give it to me. That's what this man's saying. He's coming to Jesus. He says, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. But he said to him, this is Jesus, man, who made me a judge or a arbiter or a, meaning referee, over you? Which is fair enough comment. And then Jesus said to all of them, take heed and beware of covetousness, which means greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. And then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentiful, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? And so he said, I will do this. I'll pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, that internal part of us, where all the thoughts, emotions, and feelings and attitudes come from, soul, you have many good years laid up. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Great, great. We all want to. Well, maybe not, but you know, some of these things, it's great to be able to think that we can have water to drink, food to eat, and have a joy in our heart. So, let's pause the parable right there. The man has had a good year, would you agree? Let's just dissect it for a second. He's had a good year. He's had, you know, the rain has come, the weather's been good, the pomegranates have grown, there's a lot of dates on the trees, the olives are just abundant supply, you know, it's happened well. He's been a farmer that's had a bad season in the past, but this wasn't one of them. This was a bumper crop, okay? It's done really well. So good that he hasn't got enough room to store it all, okay? This could be any of us. This could be any of us. Our employer gives us a pay rise. Our investment earns a little bit more money. We have an inheritance. It comes our way. And that's why Jesus is telling this parable. Because at times, we may have times when we haven't feel like we've got enough or it's a bit tight. And then there's other times there may be some extra. And if you haven't experienced the time of extra, it'll come one day where you'll have a bit extra. It might only be $50, it mightn't be $5,000, it mightn't be $50,000, it might be $500, but it's extra. And so Jesus is telling this parable because he wants us to understand how to, at those moments, not to be tempted to be foolish, but to be wise. So Jesus is sharing this parable, and as parables go, they're fictitious stories, okay? They're made up stories. But Jesus never indulged in fantasy or bizarre. Okay, the parables were basically real life stories that we can all relate to, and that's why I think Jesus, whenever he told a parable, or whenever you read a parable in the scriptures, he's asking you to put yourself in the story. Okay, to put yourself in the story, and I think in this case Jesus is asking us to put ourselves into the story. So that we would then start to think about what we would do with our extra or do with our money. Now, if we were to stop reading this parable right there at verse 19, we could say this. The farmer, he's had a great year, and that Jesus is saying to him, just build up a big fat savings account and live the rest of your life off that. Not a terrible idea, because I mean, the man isn't going to go to the pokies and waste it, is he? He's not going to go to the horse racing and spend it on horse racing and try to make bets and all that type of thing. He's not going to go on 365 on his phone, on his app, and say, oh yeah, I'll just, you know, all that type of stuff. Apparently now you can actually, you know, the lottos and all the big money spinning things in America, you can go on an app and now plug into them and put money on them. Did you know that? Really? I was just waiting for the answer. You told me. I don't know how I knew. I saw it on the television. Yeah, is that right? Anyway, where were we? Stop distracting me. So if Jesus chose to end the parable right there, it wouldn't have been a bad ending. But in some way, this farmer was living the dream. He was living the dream. And Jesus, reality was, there's two more verses to the story. We finished it two verses too early. And we see that really what happens is, it goes from a good situation, to a situation where Jesus actually then very clearly kind of rebukes the man. Now, it's not a real man. It could have been possibly people relating to this story, but it was a parable, remember? Better out than in, eh? Okay, let's keep moving on. Is there something in the air? Yeah. So we see, can I read the next two verses, verse 20 and 21? And God said to him, okay? Notice how it's now, Luke has written, God said to him, kind of referring to the fact that Jesus was not just the Son of God, he's actually God, talking about his divinity. He said, fool, this night your soul will be required of you, then whose will those things be which you have provided? Good point, isn't it? He stored up everything. Man, in his life, he didn't know he was going to breathe his last breath on that same day. And then so it is he who lays up treasure for himself is not rich towards God. He's not rich towards God. Fool. Jesus doesn't mince his words. He just says, you're a fool. Didn't you realize that, you know, you never know when you're going to breathe your last And you thought, well, I'm just going to live life, eat, drink, and be merry. So Jesus is really referring to the fact, don't be unwise with what the extra you have. Think about it. And I want to give you some thoughts in regards to the extra or just what we have in the way of possessions and money. Is that okay? Jesus is teaching. Look, the truth is we can ask the question, what's Jesus really trying to teach us here? And he's not, and we can say, oh, having money is a problem, or is Jesus condemning people who are rich? And that's not true. That's not the answer. That's because we see that you can be both rich and righteous. Moses was a rich and righteous person. Abraham was. Dorcas was a rich lady, had business. Lydia was another rich character in the New Testament. So there was David, was a rich person. Job was rich, lost it all, got it back again. I don't want to go through that kind of life, you know, what happened to him. But, you know, so we mustn't misinterpret and think that because if we said, oh, God condemns rich and people. No, that's a wrong misinterpretation of what the Bible says. So what is Jesus saying? Jesus is saying in Luke 12 that if you and I only do what this man did with his increase, then we will come a time suddenly when we can be seen as foolish. And why is this man seen as foolish? And you may say, I know, because he was covetous. He has, no, in other words, greedy. And you'd be right. It's saying he's greedy, but it's much deeper than that. It goes much deeper than that. And that's what I want to just dissect for a moment so that we can be careful of the same trap that sometimes possessions and finance can set for us. Goes to the very core of this man's understanding of money. So this man basically had assumed something. He had assumed something very clearly. He had an understanding of finance where it was an assumption. Let me highlight it to you in verse 17 and to 19. And this is what it says. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no money to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I'll pull down my barns and build greater ones, and there I will store my crops and my goods. And I will say, by the way, YP's group go? Sorry, it did. Great. Don't know. I had that in the back of my mind. And then in verse 19, I will say to my soul, soul, you have many good years, laid for years. Take ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Did you notice I emphasized it clearly so you could pick up on it? But there's a pattern here in this man's thinking. And his pattern was this. Everything that he owned, he thought belonged to him. And you might say, oh, well, didn't it? Well, he's assuming something that he owns everything in his possession. Eternity revealed to him to be foolish because we can assume exactly the same thing. After all, reality is we all have the name at the top of our bank statements. We all have our name on our credit cards and debit cards. It's my name. It's not God's name. It's my name. But this assumption actually is completely incorrect when we think it's all mine. I've earned it. It's all for me. And when looking at what is the truth, we see a biblical foundation that actually says something quite different. Because when we look at what we have, and two ways you can look at it, you can say it's all mine. And I've earned it. Secondly, you can say, well, instead of looking through the ownership lens of ownership, look through the lens of stewardship. Okay? Completely different. Instead of looking through the lens of ownership, look at through the stewardship. Which, when we look at through the principle of stewardship, we realize that me, my life, my possessions actually belong to God. And I'm meant to be invested for his purposes. And you say, well, that's countercultural to today's society because the world continually lives in the realm of that's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. But all of it, ultimately, I want you to understand something actually belongs to our Heavenly Father. And because we can, how we handle and use our finance and possessions, whether we use them, will be determined by answering this question of do you think it's all yours or do you think understand that God's actually entrusted you with it as a steward? And how we answer that question will determine whether we're wise or we're foolish. So we see God is the owner of what we have. Three things that he says that a steward acknowledges, a person acknowledges. And a steward, number one, a steward acknowledges that he or she belongs to the Lord. Okay? He or she belongs to the Lord. So the truth is, God just doesn't own our money, but he owns us. And you may say, wow, that sounds bordering on what? Slavery or all that type of stuff? Well, not the way maybe we're thinking. But let me just dissect it a little more, because Paul, you know, the great apostle in the New Testament, actually said this in Acts 27:23. He was in a shipwreck. The boat's going down, and he had every right to say to God, God, this wasn't on my agenda. This wasn't on my plan. How come I'm facing this turmoil, this struggle? He didn't say that. You know what Paul said? Here's what he said. For they stood by me this night, an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve. To whom I belong. What was he saying? I belong to God. Isn't that reassuring in the midst of any problem, any struggle, any kind of shipwrecked metaphor that you want to put about your life? Isn't it wonderful to the reality when we can say, you know what? In the end, I belong to God. And the truth is, God has the ultimate say, and I can trust him in the midst of my struggle because I'm his. It's a really anxious moment when you're going through problems and you have no reassurance in your heart that God actually, that I'm his. And I'm just out there in the world, and whatever the ebb and flow of problems and struggles and things that happen in this world, they're the thing that's going to control me. I want to tell you, it's so much assurance when in the ebb and flow of the world, the ups and downs of this world, when we can say, you know what? I belong to God. Because I think Paul ultimately knew that his time was not finished. And that he says, you know, I belong to God. And I believe, I think in the back of his mind he was saying, God, I think you're going to just pull me through this one. And he did. They swam to an island. And they were all safe. And no one was lost, thankfully. Mind you, interesting enough, the story goes that Paul went to get some firewood because they were all cold. And out of the firewood, a snake wrapped around him, bit him on the hand. It was a poisonous, venomous snake. And once again, you know, Paul could have said, far out, just shipwrecked, and now I die of snake bite. Because sometimes things go from bad to worse. But you know what he said? I belong to God. God's got the ultimate say. And you know, you belong to God. Ultimately, when we understand the reality that there's many things that can sit on the throne of my life, but only if I allow God to sit there, you know what? He's going to look after me. It's an assuring and reassuring. That's what's called faith, isn't it? So a steward acknowledges that he or she belongs to God. It's not about me and mine, but understanding it's all his. John S. Bunnell said this, if one first gives himself to the Lord, then all other giving is easy. And it's true that whatever we acknowledge, that everything about me belongs to him, the breath in my lungs, the blood in my veins, my car, my house, whatever I have, it belongs to Christ. And the whole issue is not difficult to negotiate and navigate through life. And Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6, 4, 7, what do you have that you did not receive? Come on. Everything we are and we have been gifted by God. And when we are born, the Bible says that we're a gift from God. And I love that thought, because it's just not my 10% if we were to go back to finance that he wants. He actually owns the whole 100% the start, and he owns me. And I'd rather be let God own me than this world destroy me. I'd rather let God own me than the world own me, because it chews you up and spits you out, folks. But God, he never does that. He is always the best interest, our best interest at heart. So we see that the steward will acknowledge that I belong to God. The steward will acknowledge that everything ultimately I have belongs to the Lord. Now, I kind of intimated already, but let me just give you a little more information. It's just not me, it's everything around me. And when we come into the world, we were not born with rings on our fingers and a nice clothes that we are set of clothes to wear. Naked we came, and generally naked we will depart. And no one has a trailer behind their hearse when they're in a coffin going to the funeral place, because we can't take it with us. So Job chapter 41, 11. And Job would know because he had much. He was a rich, very rich man. He lost it all. And then through a set of events, he got it all back. But it says, this is what he said, Job 41, 11. Everything under heaven is mine, says God. That's what it says. And it doesn't have this exemption list. We probably don't verbalize it, but sometimes in our heart, well, God, it's all yours, but oh, God, can I just keep my car? That's mine, isn't it? That amount of money. You know, you can have 500, but God, you know, there's another 500. Can I just use that? That's mine, isn't it? He doesn't have any. Job didn't put an exemption list in place. It was all his. Deuteronomy 10:14. This is what it says. Indeed, heaven and the highest heavens belong to the Lord your God. Also, the earth with all that is in it belong to God. Haggai 2:8. That little book in the Old Testament says this. The silver is mine and the gold is mine, says the Lord of hosts. We don't have much silver and gold in the way of coins these days. But, you know, we've got bank balances. We've got apps on our phone. It tells you how much you got. James 1:16 says, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes from the Father of lights. So here we go. Everything. So we belong to him. Everything we own belongs to him. I hope you can get your head around this because the world will scream at you and says, no, it's not. It's yours. You worked hard for it. You deserve it. And you do. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying in our hearts, let's realize where it ultimately come from. Oh, you say, my employer. Oh, where did he get it from? Oh, he got it from the bank. Oh, where did he get it from? Look, I won't go further, but the reality is ultimately we've got to see that there's a God in heaven that ultimately owns it all. Owns a cattle on 1,000 hills, they tell me. I wouldn't mind a little bit of that. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? But anyway, that's the reality. Third thing, a steward. So not only does he own us, or we can give ourselves to him, but not in our belongings, but a steward acknowledges their role is to faithfully oversee that all has been entrusted to them. That awareness motivates us to manage everything in our lives in a God-glorifying way. And we hear people say that, you know, we're a gift from God. Children are a gift from the Lord. And yes, they are. But I've decided in my thinking as well, not only am I a gift, but God has in, I am, and in, let me get it right, because life, being a gift, is also an entrustment. He's entrusted us with life. How are we going to use it? He's entrusted us with blessings. He's entrusted us with things that we have. He's entrusted us with a bank balance. He's entrusted us with food. He's entrusted us with many, 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 many things. And he's saying, how are you going to use that? How are you going to disperse that? How are you going to be aware of that? Stewardship, see, it's not about a certain amount of money. We've got to get that out of our mind. Stewardship is about an attitude of the heart and how we see the world that we live in, which can be, and this whole principle, you know, your television will scream at you, your social media will scream at you that this is totally stupid. The things I'm presenting are totally ridiculous. Why would you ever believe that a God who loves you and that you want to make, he has it all, it's all his? Why would you believe that? Because the world is so far away from God's plan and perfect, wonderful plan and purpose. And often, that's why Christian values often are confronting to our mindsets, because we sometimes have taken a hold of a worldly principle and standard, and that's how we live. And yet we need to backtrack and say, Father, I need to grab your values, your principles, and how to live life. And so, you know, when we're good stewards, instead of wondering about how to spend our time, talent, and treasure, why don't we ask God, how should I invest your time, God, your talent that you've given me, your giftings in my life, and your treasure in a way that meets your desires and purpose for my life? And I've come to understand that I can make much better decisions when I first fully embrace the reality that all I have and all I am is his. There's a passage in one of the last books in the Bible, Malachi chapter 3. Some of you know it well. Verses 8 to 10, it says, you know, will a man rob God or will a woman rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, in what way have we robbed you, God? Well, he says, in tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, for this whole nation. So this is God speaking to the Jewish nation. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, into the place, temple where you worship. Will there not be food in my house? And try me now. And this says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such blessing that there will be not enough room to receive it. Why would God say that we are robbing him if it wasn't his in the first place? That's just a question. I'll let you answer it. And when we tithe and give offerings, we're not actually being generous to God. We're simply obeying God. And we see tithing is a practical and scriptural way to put God first with your money. Do you know, I always wondered about this passage. And this is where getting older helps you understand that it actually can happen. Because as you get older, when you're younger, you think, how in the world am I ever going to have enough that you pour out such blessing that I'll not have enough room to receive it? Well, it happens because this man in the parable actually had not enough room to receive it. See that? If only he'd read Malachi, and Malachi would have been there for him to read the Old Testament, but he didn't take any notice of that. And I used to personally wonder, how in the world could that ever be that you would have not have enough room for it? But as you get older, sometimes you can discover those things do actually happen. And you can get to a point where you say, wow, I've really got more than enough. I've really got more than enough. So God, what do I need to do with the extra? And that's when you can start to explore the wonderful world of just being a blessing somewhere. And that's why money can be so empowering to be a blessing. It's true that God calls himself Jehovah Jireh. It means our provider. And why would he call himself that? Because we live in a world where fluctuating money markets, interest rates go up and down, our mortgages have to pay more this month than we did last month, all those type of things. Jobs come and go, incomes change. Of course, we need to be responsible and we need to do our best at work. I'm not saying that. Let's just stop working, let's just live at home and God will look after me. No, it doesn't work that way. God asks us to be responsible. He asks us to do fair day's work for fair day's pay. But the point is whether the financial world is in a downturn or upturn, that does not determine whether God is my provider or not. Amen? He's going to be our provider. And so I'm not dictated to by the fluctuations of the world economy. I don't need to be dictated to by whether I have little or I have much. What I'm dictated to is by the reality that God is still Jehovah Jireh, whether he's still Jehovah Jireh in the bad times as much as he is in the good times. And if I can trust him in the good, don't be such a terrible Christian that I wouldn't trust him in the bad. When I say terrible, I'm just trying to get an adjective to describe it, but just a foolish Christian that I wouldn't trust him in the bad. As the team come, thank you. You know, as I said, the longer you live on this world, hopefully you get more wisdom. That's not always the case. Sometimes what happens is we get older and we get more foolish, but we can get older and hopefully get more wiser. And as I said, I'm no financial advisor, so I can point you somewhere, but don't come to me. But I do know a financial advisor that's really good, and this is and literally this is what he said, what I just told you today. He's brilliant, and you know when I was young, someone said to me at the age of 20, because I'd been working for about 2.5 years, and they said, why don't you buy a house? That's a good investment. I thought, that sounds like a good idea. I was pretty naive, to be honest. Mum and Dad said, just buy a house. They found me a house. I said, I'll take that. It was $36,000. I paid it off by the time I was 28 because it wasn't real hard. I appreciate today, you can't buy a house for that. And in comparative to the wages, what you buy is so much more to pay for the little. You pay much more for a house on not as, you know what I'm saying? It's not like it was when I was 20. It takes a lot longer sometimes to pay off a house. But anyway, it was just a normal little house, and at the age of 24, I got married, and Michelle moved in, and I bought a bed, and my mum gave me a dining room table, and that's all we had. I did buy this little fridge, and it kind of got too small, and so on. after children came along. And so someone gave me a big fridge. It lasted for 20 years. And then someone gave me a lounge chair, because in our lounge room, we didn't have anything. And someone gave me a lounge chair. It was brilliant. And then after 10 years, I'd sit in that lounge chair and my bottom would touch the carpet. And so I threw that one away because someone gave me another lounge chair. And I thought, well, how did they know about that? Obviously, they'd sat in the chair. And then someone gave me the big fridge that I had for 20 years. It was just about had it. And then someone comes along and gives me another fridge. I'm like, wow, God, how did that happen? Never asked anybody. Maybe they just came to my place and saw what I didn't have. Anyway, someone gave me a car one year. It was a Toyota. It was a good car. And I kept it for a while and then I gave it away. And after about 7 years, they gave it back. So I fixed it up. And I gave it away again. It's the eternal car. Toyotas are just so... Yeah, I used to be Holden, but now I'm Toyota. Is that okay? So it's amazing what happens. And you know, I remember someone gave me $5,000. It was so good. I had three children, lived in a little box on stilts. That was the house. And it was cool. It was a home. You know, it's amazing what you can do with very little. Because Michelle and I went from, I took up a position in the church at 28. And Michelle and I went from an engineer's wage and a dental therapist wage to just a little pastor's wage. And we couldn't have been happier. Couldn't have been happier. Because we just wanted to serve God's kingdom. And we'd always applied the principle of just giving tithes and offerings, blessing. And you know what? It's true. When you're faithful with little, He'll give you more to be faithful with. And I found myself in time, as I've grown up, and I'm still growing up, but in time that I was given so I could actually be now, not just meet our needs and give tithes and offerings, I can actually be a blessing to people. I can actually provide for others. I can be empowered to see someone else blessed. It's incredible, isn't it? And I wanted, why am I telling you all this? Because I want your money. I'm really not interested in your money. I just want you to know this incredible principle that you've got to walk away from what the world says, keep it for me, 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 and understand that there's a wonderful principle that if you understand that he owns us in the most wonderful way, all that we have is his, and that if we wisely invest and wisely look after what we have, which God wants us to do, our gifting, our talents, our possessions, our finance, it's amazing that you get to the point where you actually can have Malachi chapter 3, where you can have so much, you can be a blessing to others. Yeah, you're not convinced about that? 40 years I've been living it, and I want to tell you it works. Because that's the way God works. Now, we're not this church that's a prosperous, this church of, you know, you've got to be a millionaire. We're not like that. We're not that kind of church, okay, if you're just wondering. And this is not that type of message. It's a message, whatever you have, just be thankful and faithful with what you have. Come on. Can we stand? That'd be great. And we're going to sing. What am I trying to do? I'm trying to provoke you. Did you get that? I'm trying to provoke you to live God's way. Basically, that's what it is. I'm just trying to provoke you to serve his purposes. And I want you to say that it's a process of learning, this process. It's a process of learning. Because, you know, we can look at Malachi 3 and think, oh, gee, I'm not doing exactly. Just take it and just one step at a time. And God is so gracious to you and me. He's so wonderful to us that he allows us just to take it a step at a time. So gracious. One step at a time. But you grow and you grow and you grow, and before you know it, you get to the ripe old age of 35 and you've learned a lot. Or even a little bit older. And it's amazing how much that you can then apply and see God's blessing. And some of you know this long before I'll ever preach it because you're living it. But I want to encourage us all. Come on, let's sing this beautiful song, hey? Just for a moment. And I just want to pray for you guys, and we're going to release you then. And we've gone to the water baptism service. Thank you.